Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Details at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments at adm.com/farmerview.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the October 5 edition of Commodity Week. Well, the United States Department of Agriculture is shuttered. We'll find out what the crop production and WASDE reports won't do next week and what it might mean to the marketplace as we make our way through this edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later on in this half hour, we'll talk with John Bondurant, the Bondurant Futures out of Memphis, Tennessee. Our panelists today include Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson from right here in Champaign County, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises from Mandeville, Louisiana. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Or follow us on Twitter at Commodity Week.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408. Available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at agrigold.com. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Well, let's begin our questions with this one, Jackie Vakes. This week, the United States Department of Agriculture did not release any of its reports that would have been due out. Most of those had to do with livestock, but there were some inspection reports that were due out for grains. And did it have much of an impact in Chicago?
Well, I think that it was pretty subdued as far as the impact goes. One thing that we've seen is lower volume, you know, and I think that's been a result of what's going on with the government, but everybody's hopeful that we'll get back and running again. The question is, when we come in on Monday night, see, Monday night we still had was the September 30th. We still had the crop progress report with the inspection report. This Monday we won't have those. And so now it will begin to escalate in terms of lack of information and which direction to go.
Pete Manhart?
Yeah, I think the USDA, their information weekly, without it, there's a little bit of a vacuum and there's a little bit of worry about what people are doing. But we do have private companies' estimates. We have private grain companies with what they are seeing out there as far as yields. And so, as far as the actual trade going up and down, I don't think it made much difference. But it's the vacuum of worry, of lack of information to trade off of or to deviate off of, et cetera, that bothers a few people.
And Dan Zwicker.
I think it opens the opportunity for a big export sale to sneak in here, or at least let's hope so. We need some in corn. But I really don't think it's going to make any difference. I think probably the biggest impact is and it's likely to drag on, it's from what the way I'm reading the political lines. This is going to last a while, so my guess is we'll get a postponement of the October crop report, and that'll go on. So the November report's going to be the next big report that we come at.
So, Dan, I want you to take us through a couple of things on the charts in particular, because we posted outside up weeks in the bean meal, and we posted an outside up week in July wheat, soft red. And we posted outside down weeks in both of the December corn contracts.
Well, meal is the driving force of the soybean complex right now. I mean, there is export interest in soybean meal. That started to show up here a couple days ago, and that is what kind of fueled these soybeans a little bit higher. As you can look at soybean oil, continues to struggle. Basically, the wheat market, when you look at the chart of the wheat market, I primarily watch Chicago wheat. I mean, we rolled out of a rounded bottom and took off like Grant took Richmond. So I think that has kind of sealed the deal that we've got an uptrend going in wheat. And wheat has been looking for a reason, I think, to gain on corn or get back to more of a normal type relationship between wheat and corn, which I think is positive. Corn, in a sense, is that if we get back to something more normal, then we're going to see more feed usage come into the equation on corn. But we have tightening balance sheets in wheat going on worldwide, and that anytime you've got tighter supplies, the market has to respond to it to the upside. Corn and beans, you know, we're just basically into harvest. We're really not that far down the road. I think those markets are just reflecting all of the better-than-expected yield reports that we're hearing across the Corn Belt. But with that said, we're kind of in the deal that I think all we're hearing is the good ones, and the lackluster yields are nobody's talking about them. So I'm not sure the crop is quite as big as what a lot of people would think. But that's what's being reflected in the marketplace today.
You know, when you go back and you look at the grain stocks report, you know, you talk about wheat looking for a reason to get more in balance with corn. I think the grain stocks report certainly showed that in that last quarter we fed more wheat than we fed corn. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how we move forward, and especially now that Argentina is so doggone dry in the wheat areas. You know, they've cut off their wheat exports, and that's been bringing Brazil over to us. That's bringing China into us. And so, you know, hopefully wheat's been I agree with you, Dan. Wheat's been waiting for some reason to go higher, and let's hope that it can support corn.
July wheat, by the way, in Chicago settled at $6.93¾. It was up 9.5 cents for the week. I'm wondering, and maybe I'll poll all of you. We'll start with you, Jackie, whether there is something that producers who plan to sow wheat this fall should do at this point in the terms of forward sales, if anything, or not at all.
Well, I think when you look at Chicago wheat, we've got a 702 insurance level, and we're right in the middle. We finish up the discovery period for KC wheat and for Minneapolis wheat now on the 14th of October. And right now it's been averaging just pretty close to $7. So I'd say that if we have a market that's above $7, they may want to do something to protect the additional bushels they don't have crop insurance on, or don't anticipate, you know, depending upon the percentage. And other than that, I think I'd leave it be.
Pete?
Yeah, I think unless they go give that, just wait and see if we can climb higher into the winter, which we normally do, and take advantage maybe of that in December, January.
And Dan, your view?
Well, it looks to me like a double crop option, at least to me, at least projects the best potential anyway as we look ahead toward 14. Beans, 14 beans are $11.74, so we're talking about $11 soybeans. You've got new crop Chicago wheat at $6.93, so let's say you want to talk $6.50 wheat. If you're in an area that can do the double crop and you've got pretty good soils, I think that offers a lot of per acre gross compared to where corn could be headed if all these yield reports are correct and we're building stocks over the 2 billion bushel mark. I'm afraid that February average on these corn could be a whole lot closer to $4 than $5 at this time.
December corn, by the way, posted an outside down week, as we already noted. It had a high of $4.62, a low at $4.35. Settlement price there was at $4.43¼. It was off 10¾ from the previous week. December of 14, or the new crop, also posting an outside down at $4.85, finished 7¼ cents lower for the week. The numbers coming in from the field have been really good.
Yeah, we early in the week made those lows at 435. We bounced off of them by the end of the week. And I think that's just telling us that there is usage out there, and that you know, that 435 we made, there was people talking, getting through 40, going to 25, maybe lower. We have to see what the rest of the yields are. There's still worry as we move north and west about, will the yields be as good?
You have a feel yet, Pete, for whether this crop is growing in size or not?
Everybody I talk to from Nebraska, Iowa, Indiana, Illinois, is really pleased with their yields, and they're better than people thought they would be.
Yeah, there's no question about that. Even when you go out into Kansas, you go into Nebraska dryland corn, you go into South Dakota, and you're hearing better yields. And actually, even in parts of Iowa, the yields are coming in better than what you would expect. I guess, you know, the question is, perhaps due to the drought, we left more nutrients in the ground, and the new hybrids maybe really knew how to use it this year. We just, some of these yields are so surprising when you look at how long those areas went without rain.
Did you cover this season like last season crop insurance, and do you need to think about when to take that off?
I did. Yes.
And it comes off generally in October, or
yes,
if you're hedging, it would.
That's exactly right, and, you know. And the question will be, will the farmer just decide that what he's going to do is carry it over and just cover his bushels, just transfer it and look at it from the standpoint of, I cover crop insurance. Now those bushels are still covered. We'll look to see when a low comes in before we're going to necessarily pick those up.
And so that's where you stand then?
That's where I stand.
And Dan, where do you think this thing is headed?
Well, it wouldn't surprise me here that we get a bubble up in prices here during the month of October. Some of the stuff that I'm looking at from a technical perspective, at least one could maybe argue that we could have some kind of short covering bounce in October. I mean, the market seems to have handled the FC Stone crop okay. It seemed to have handled the Informa economics yield estimates and production estimates. So it does look like a lot of this supply bearishness is worked into the marketplace. Now the question is at what point does farmers sell? So far, sales have been generally limited. And I guess my guess, just thinking, is that sales could increase toward the end of harvest. End users still need supplies. So there could be a reason this thing could give us an October bounce in here, maybe into November, and then we maybe tail off then into the end of the year and on into January in the winter. I really worry if the crop is that big and if demand doesn't pick up, that basis levels and even futures levels could get awfully sloppy as you go toward the end of the year and as you go on into the winter months, simply because farmers do grow the crop to sell eventually. I know a lot of them can store it, but eventually that's going to have to be sold to generate cash for the new crop planting season.
By the way, USDA's current crop forecast, and it's not likely to be updated next October the 11th or Friday, is 13.843 billion bushels. Informa's number was just above 14 million, and the FC Stone number was 14,150.
Yeah, that bothers me, the private industry of showing a 1.8 billion to 2.2 billion carryout. Is that going to allow after harvest for prices to creep back up, or is that just going to be a heavy thing over us? And with new crop 14, 40 cents above this year's, I would be looking at covering, doing something on next year's crop, because by February, with all this carryout, what will those prices be on next year's insurance? So I'd be looking at covering some 14 crop, and I would be looking at getting rid of this year's crop, and when we see lows, then maybe re-owning it on paper.
Well, I agree with you all the way, Pete, when it's 14 crop. You know, I'd like to go back to and just touch on what Dan was talking about. The adjustment that we're going to need to make after being in tight years like we've been in is going back to where we've been when we've had strong carryouts. And if you look at that, in most cases what happens is when futures go higher, basis gets poorer. When basis improves, futures get poorer. And you ultimately end up a lot of times with either the same cash or less cash than you would have. So I think that for all of the people who listen, all of our producers, that is one thing that it's going to be a hard adjustment to make. Because, and you hear it from guys, you know, you hear guys say, I'm going to store corn because I know basis is going to get better. That isn't necessarily going to be true for this year.
Dan, do you think the market would prefer they just move it in through the system? The market usually does, especially when they're empty. But
the market, the commercial grain trade always wants to buy grain. I mean, they're in the business to buy grain. And then, you know, they make their money by earning carrying charges in the futures market and then by merchandising that. I mean, that's part of that. Farmer is really not in a position to do that. I mean, yes, if a farmer wants to become a true hedger, it all depends upon your yield. For those that these yields that are coming in very, very strong, I think they need to take a look at what spot price is, multiply it by the yield that they're getting, look at it from a per acre gross basis, and, you know, if it works and you make money at it, you might be better off to let that go, and so you don't have the agony of winter blues on you all winter. Just come south here and stay warm.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. October is starting out very warm with some rain. Statewide temperatures have been about 5 to 6 degrees above average. We've had widespread showers across the state with some heavier rainfall of an inch or more in the northwest corner and across parts of central Illinois. The National Weather Service forecasts indicate that we have a 60 to 70% chance for rain on Saturday and a 40 to 60% chance on Saturday night as a cold front moves through the state. Rain should clear out of Illinois by Sunday morning. Expected rainfall totals are in the 1/4 to 1/2 inch range in western and northern Illinois. They are a little higher in east central Illinois and the southern third of the state with amounts of 1/2 inch to 1 1/2 inches in that area. Daytime highs on Saturday will be in the low 70s in the northwest and in the mid to upper 70s across the rest of the state. Overnight lows will be in the 40s and low 50s. Highs on Sunday will be in the 60s. Temperatures will climb into the 70s as the week progresses with no chance of rain until next weekend. The 6 to 10 day and 8 to 14 day forecasts show above average temperatures across Illinois and above average rainfall in western Illinois. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
This is the October 4 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities, and Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson. On the phone line from Memphis, Tennessee, John Bondurant of Bondurant Futures. John, thank you for taking the time with us today. Can you tell me from your vantage there in Memphis how the early corn harvest went in Tennessee and the Delta region?
It was probably biggest ever, yield-wise, in general. It was a fabulous crop.
And which direction did it go?
Up.
North. It didn't go to the southwest? To the
you mean which direction? Some of it went north, some of it went downriver.
And your expectation for the coming year, John, for the price of corn?
A big bear. Big bear.
How big?
350.
For how long?
I'll put it this way. As a farmer, I'm big hedge 14 and fairly hedge 15. Does that give you an idea what I think, I guess?
And so you're thinking that the boom time is over?
Yep, and I think the biggest downside risk is in beans.
In soybeans?
Yes.
Why is that the case?
Well, I think South America is going to plant a lot of beans. Corn prices will lousy, and we're going to have bigger acreage there, and I think meal is in trouble because we're going to have cheap corn. We had good meal demand because corn was high last year, and that's a thing of the past, so I think we're going to see meal usage drift over into corn and a big world crop, and I just think beans are grossly overpriced where they are. I mean, you look back in the early 2000 era where we had 17% to 20% world carryovers, and beans were from $4 to $6. Now we got a 26% carryover that could be much bigger coming. So I think the real big downside is in beans.
Can I ask you, John, is some of your opinion on the downside in beans based on expansion of acres for next year here in the U.S. also?
Well, I just think we've just got too much of everything. I think we got too much corn, too much wheat, too many beans. Alternate oil seeds are big, canola, palm oil, sun, a whole bit. And looks like Russia and Ukraine have finally got their act a bit together. And the corn yields are getting better and more of it. And I think the boom times are over.
Would you be in, I heard you say you had 14 and 15 both covered on both corn and beans, or?
Well, I'm pretty much covered in 15 on both of them and in wheat. 14, excuse me. In 15, I'm more corn, September corn. I've sold a lot of that at over a little over $5. And I just started selling November beans in the $11.50 to $11.70 area this week. So that's pretty far out. I'm only about 30% hedged there, about 75% hedged in 14.
I agree with that. I think, with the big crops in the world, and we went from a poor crop in the world to huge crops in the world, that we're going to see downside coming for a while anyway.
Yeah, and I think this year's corn carryover, incidentally, I've got it at $2.5 billion. I've got
my question, John, if the downside risk is as deep as what you're thinking, what is that going to do to southern agriculture in that Arkansas, Mississippi, Tennessee area? I mean, where have farmers got themselves at on cost of production? Where have they got themselves on, I guess, cash rent or land prices? I mean, what's that going to do to the southern regions if prices get that?
Well, prices on land are nowhere close to y'all's. Like, we're $200 cash rent sort of top, and $4,500 is a hop on land prices. The hedge funds have been paying 20 times cash rent for farmland here, so I think it goes down, but not as badly as what could happen in your area, in the north. I mean, that land is amazingly high priced in relation to rent. And if calf prices come down where I think they are, you're going to have a whole lot of cash-renting farmers are going to go broke. I mean, who can make money at $3.50 corn if you're paying $300 cash rent? I don't know if anybody can make it. Or at $4 corn, for that matter.
It's a valid question, and it's certainly a major concern that we all have. With the fantastic yields you're talking about down there, John, last year you were a big proponent of a lot of extra corn acres. Is that what you're seeing for 14 in the south?
I think it's going to stay about the same, Jackie. Wheat acreage look like it's going to be down a little bit. I'm planting wheat right now. I think wheat's down a little bit, and corn stays about where it is. Beans stays where it is. Cotton, we're completely left and not coming back probably. So I would say about the same thing. Only thing that's really going on south in here is the amount of irrigation is just staggering. I keep thinking they can't have any more land to irrigate, and they do. Because corn price has been good. We get good corn yields. It's an easy crop. And it comes out early. You know, normally we're off in August. So that's what's going on in the south. We're going to continue with corn.
Hey, John, I have a different question. Since you're bearish agriculture, at least for a couple of years, those producers who stayed in but were thinking that they might get out in 2006, 7, and 8 decided they wanted to ride the good times.
Mm-hmm.
When do they jump out? How quickly now do you suppose they ought to get out?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. That's a tough question. I mean, it's individual questions. I mean, I would be very fearful. I think landlords ought to be fearful of cash renters. If you got somebody that's on a 3 or 5 year cash rent at a big price, that may not come off.
outside of this bearish thing, what can we do to protect ourselves for the rest of this year and into 14?
Well, I think clearly you hedge 14 December, like you were talking about earlier. 14 December corn at 40 cents higher is pretty attractive, and I don't see any particular fall off in corn acreage. I mean, obviously, we're going to have to make corn acreage fall off, but if we make it fall off, it just goes in soybeans. Then where are you? It's kind of a double-barrel bad situation. So I would think you hedge, like y'all are talking about, I'd hedge December corn, 14 corn pretty aggressively, and if I'm long 13 corn, I think I'd just get rid of it. And I'm like Jackie, I mean, if you try to store it on thinking you're going to pick up in the basis, you may pick up in the basis, but lose in price and get nowhere or worse. So that's not. I'm not very encouraging here. I'm sorry. I'm just not a bull.
You're Mr. Doom and Gloom.
This is awful. I don't really feel doom and gloomy, but I think it's. I've been a bear on corn for a long time, as y'all know.
Yeah. I think it's all part of realism, and it's all part of risk management, is what it is. You know, we covered the February crop insurance prices on corn and beans both a long, long time ago, just because. Being fearful of the size of the carryout. And, you know, when you look at the crop this year, you know, you talk about irrigation down there, John. You know, you can't imagine how much tile has gone in everywhere. And I think that's another reason that we're seeing better yields. And we didn't compact the soil last fall like we do so many times when we have a wet fall. So nobody knows what – I guess we're going to find out what the hybrids can really do now.
You know, what bothers me about the crop estimates, we're all talking the 155s, 158, maybe 160, but gosh knows there are a lot of way plus 200 bushel bean corn yields out there, and you got to make that up with an awful lot of low ones to come back to 155 or 160.
Yeah.
When would you prefer, John, that the crop production report come out?
Because I don't have any clue. I'd like to get it out of the way, and more likely see what the harvested acres were. That's another thing going in next year. We've got 1.8 million more acres coming out of the CRP, and surely we won't lose as many prevent plant acres as we did this year. So acreage next year on the planted part and harvested part ought to be better.
Hey, John, thank you so much for taking the time with us.
Well, sorry to be so gloomy. Terrible.
Well, maybe by the time we get to you next April, it'll be happy times again.
Good.
John Bondurant is with Bondurant Futures out of Memphis, Tennessee. Let's wrap it up with a final word from our panelists. We'll start with you, Jackie Vakes.
Well, as we head deeper into harvest and everybody gets more tired, please, please be very, very careful. It's dangerous out there.
Pete Manhart?
Yeah, be careful out there every day and be looking out to that 14 crop, 40 cents higher than now, to ensure something for next year. That February price might not be very good when we get there.
And Dan Zwicker.
Well, I think all in all, there's a lot of water go under the bridge each day, and a lot of things can change worldwide in agriculture. So I do think that John is correct in the sense that there's potential here to be super bearish, but there should be some selling opportunities that come along here over the next few months.
Just one observation, Dan. There's a lot more water that goes under the bridge where you live than where we live. That wraps up this edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willhe.org. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. And if you want, you can follow us on Twitter. The account is @CommodityWeek. Have a great week.